Okay, thanks, Freddie. The title of the talk is Daily Life in Socialism. The Socialist Party has a single aim, the establishment of a socialist society, socialism. When we talk about socialism, we usually do so in rather general terms. Common ownership, democratic control, production for use. And of course, it's essential to do that. But sometimes I think that doesn't really relate very directly to people's experiences. So what I'm going to try to do in this talk, or this address, as Freddie called it, what I'm going to do in this talk is to try to make things a little more concrete by going through a day in the life of a person living in socialism. I shall make it clear before I go any further that there is a lot of speculation in what follows and a lot of personal opinion. So I'm not saying this is how it will be, nor am I even saying this is how I think it will be. I'm just saying this is how it might be. What do those listening to this talk think about that? So I really just want to get you to think about things a bit. I'm certainly not laying down the law in any way. And I wonder, for instance, if that expression, laying down the law, will survive into socialism. Here we go then, a day in the life of a person living in a socialist society. You'll get up in the morning. Even in socialism, you have to get up in the morning. But for reasons that we'll discover, it'll probably be rather later than you have to get up now. You'll have your breakfast and you'll have something healthy, porridge or toast or whatever. And let's assume that while you're having your breakfast, you put the radio on. And I know this means, along with the radio and the post and so on, that other people will have to get up a bit earlier in order to bring these things to you. But we'll just leave that aside for the moment. So while you're listening to the radio, one thing that's come on is the news. And that immediately raises the question, what would the news be about in socialism? At the moment, of course, most of the news is about the pandemic. And if anything like that happened in socialism, then clearly that would be part of the news as well. And perhaps also the news would deal with things like how environmental issues were being tackled and what problems remained and what progress had been made. But what is the news about now? Well, the news about now, other than the pandemic, is usually about politics or economics or war and so on. And that just won't happen, won't exist in socialism. Many of you will be aware of that famous short chapter in William Morris's News from Nowhere, where it simply said, there is no politics in the future society. And equally, there will be no money, no buying and selling, and therefore no economics either. And there'll be no wars or anything either. And hopefully there'll be no celebrity culture. So maybe there'll not be very much to talk about in the news in socialism. Maybe in a socialist society, the news really will be about holes in Blackburn. I have to confess that on past experience, that line isn't as brilliantly witty as I thought it was when I came up with it, but never mind. There'd also be the post. And I mean, what sort of post, whether we're talking about physical post or emails, but there'll be no financial stuff. And so much of the stuff you get in the post today is finance, bank statements, credit card statements and bills and so on, or advertising of one kind or another. So I'm sure there'll be much less post email in a socialist society than there is now. After breakfast, you travel to work. And let's assume that there are going to be rather shorter commuting distances in socialism. There won't be the sort of hour and a half drag that many people have now. There'll be decent public transport. I suspect that cities will be smaller than they are now in many cases, and there'll be rather less of a town-country divide. Cars will be there to get you from A to B, not as status symbols. And of course, the balance between private and public transport is something that will have to be decided in a socialist society. But cars will be there to get you from A to B. They won't be status symbols, because what would having a big car say about you? When, in a sense, anyone could have a big car if they wanted one. And it would just be a saying way of saying how look how important I am or whatever, but that's not something that people will worry about in socialism, I think. There'll be decent childcare for kids and so on and so on. So there'll be much less hassle in terms of commuting, I think, in the socialist society. Work itself will be rather different from now, primarily because you won't be working for an employer. You'll be working for the good of yourself and for the good of the community as a whole. The resources of the earth will belong to everybody, and they'll be used to satisfy human need. And this need is not just a matter of consuming goods and services. This need is also a matter of enjoyable and satisfying work. And as far as possible, it will dirty, dangerous, boring, repetitive work will be done away with. I know it's easy to say that, but that will clearly be an important aim and so on. So repetitive white-collar work, for example, will be done away with as much as possible, and all kinds of repetitive work. And there's a lovely sentence in a party pamphlet, The Case for Socialism, dating from 1962, says that in socialist society, quote, healthy young men will not grow pigeon-chested over fusty bank ledgers, end of quote. I suppose nowadays, young and old men and women tend to crouch over computer terminals rather than account books. But the same sort of principle applies, I guess, that boring, repetitive work will be done away with as possible. And people will probably, as much something that they do now, will value interaction with others, and so travel agents rather than booking a whatever it is over the internet or something like that. And there will be shorter hours in socialism, I think, because the reasons that will emerge, we won't need to work quite so long and quite so hard in order to provide for what people want. Of course, one recent change because of the pandemic is working from home, and maybe there'll be some working from home, maybe what is now being called hybrid working, when people work some of the time from home and some of the time from an office or wherever. Of course, there's a great deal of work which can't be done from home, which you have to do from office, factory, building site, whatever, and some other place of work. Talking to some of the people I used to work with, the impression I've got is that working from home was fine to begin with, but after a while it began to become very boring, and people really do appreciate interaction with other people. So the precise nature of work and hybrid working is something that will have to be decided in terms of individuals and individual places of work and so on. Then comes your lunch break, you'll chat to your colleagues, but let's say you need to do a bit of shopping, and we'll use the word shop, it doesn't matter what term you use for the activity or for the places where you go to. Let's say that you need a new electric kettle. A few years ago, I needed to buy a new electric kettle, so I went into a department store in Manchester. I think it was Debenhams, if anyone remembers that name. And there was this whole wall full of different makes of electric kettle, all of which do the same bloody thing. They boil water. And some of them were different colours. Yeah, I suppose there's some point in that. Some were advertised as being quicker than others, you know, so it saves you 5 seconds every time you make a cup of tea. And some were advertised as being quieter than others, so they don't sing a song every time they boil or something. But it really is a bit daft to have all these competing makes of things which do the same thing. So what all you'll have is free access to good quality kettles, saucepan, blah, etc., etc., etc. No one, after all, is going to take 50 kettles or 50 frying pans or 50 whatever's home with them. I came across a little while ago the concept of enoughism. People don't want lots of things, they just want enough. And that's precisely the kind of situation which will apply in socialism. And I think people can be allowed to decide for themselves what is enough. One issue which arises is in terms of fashion. Will there still be fashion in socialism? Will people want lots of pairs of shoes or lots of ties or whatever, if people still wear ties? in the past, when I've given this talk in a face-to-face meeting, I usually say, looking around, I get the impression that socialists aren't terribly interested in being fashionable. I can't say that now, so you have to decide for yourselves whether socialists really do like being fashionable. And in terms of possessions and so on, I've got a couple of quotes from other people here. Oscar Wilde once said that in socialism, the true perfection of man would be, true perfection of a person would be not in what a person has, but in what a person is. So it's in terms of a person's own qualities, not in terms of what they own and how many shirts they have, that that's what makes a person perfect is the wrong term, but that's what makes a person, if you like. And another quote from the science fiction writer Ursula Le Guin. One of her novels is set on a world where there are no permanent gender statuses, that most of the time people are neither male nor female, and they only become male or female at particular times. And Le Guin says, quote, "One is respected and judged only as a human being. It is an appalling experience." So you wouldn't be judged as a man or woman, just as a human being, and as she says. That can be a bit of a shock, perhaps. Lunchtime, you have your lunch, and we can't predict what people's food habits will be or what the agricultural situation will be, but quite possibly less meat will be eaten. There'll be more vegetarians, more vegetarianism. But whatever people eat, there'll be no motive for anyone to provide cheap and nasty food, or for that matter, cheap and nasty anything else. So whatever you have for lunch, it'll be decent quality. Don't mean everybody wants some gourmet food all the time, but the food will be decent quality. It will be produced in some ethical way, and it won't be in any way bad for you. And I've already made the point that work will be shorter in hours than happens nowadays under capitalism, because under capitalism, so much effort is put into pointless and destructive and counterproductive work. Money, everything to do with money, everything to do with armies, everything to do with government, credit cards, banks, and all this kind of stuff will be completely irrelevant, and people will instead do far more interesting and worthwhile and useful work. There's a book by David Graeber called Bullshit Jobs, where he points out that so much work is useless from any kind of point of view, really. It's as much for anything else to make some of the managers feel important, or to make it look as if the firm is taking into account certain general principles, whereas they're not really doing that at all. So we're working shorter hours, and I wonder if even the term work-life balance, will that really mean anything in a socialist society? Maybe it will, maybe it won't, but it'll be a sort of kind of different kind of balance and different kind of issue from that which exists nowadays. Marx once described labour as, in socialism, being life's prime want. I've never been entirely convinced about that, but maybe people will certainly want to work, because not working is boring and so on. How important it is and how it relates to the rest of your life will clearly depend on individuals and on how socialist society is functioning. After work, you go home, and maybe there will be different living arrangements in socialism. Maybe some people will live in nuclear families, some will live in communes. It'll be up to people to decide in a much more easygoing kind of way than is possible under capitalism. And society need not be the same everywhere. Some people will, maybe in some areas, people will still take siestas and so on, and others won't because the weather won't be up to it. I think, too, people will live longer in socialism. There'll be no wars or famines, there'll be less stress, there'll be better diets and so on. So you'll have to think more about how to spend your time after you retire. That's assuming that people do retire rather than just carry on working a little bit. People's homes will be comfortable without being luxurious. There'll be no slums. There'll be no fuel poverty. Equally, there'll be no one living in 50-room mansions or anything like that. So it will be a society where homes and housing in general are built to meet human need, and where people's needs and wants are met in a hopefully fairly straightforward kind of way. So we come to the evening. What do you do? Well, maybe you're thinking of becoming a vegan, so you go to a meeting organised by a local vegan advocacy group or something like that. Or you go to a meeting to decide whether or not to rebuild a local bridge, which is something that needs to be decided. Or perhaps you just want to do other things. So I'll leave it to you to decide what you might like to do in an evening in socialism. But let me here read somebody else's views on similar issues. I have with me a biography of a man called Harvey Milk. Harvey Milk was the equivalent of a local councillor in San Francisco back in the 1980s. He was the first open, I think he was the first openly gay elected politician in the States. He wasn't a socialist, Harvey Milk, but he did have some interesting things to say about community and neighbourhoods and so on. And I'm going to read a couple of extracts from a speech which Harvey Milk used to give. He talks in this right at the start about the American dream, but please don't just reject that because of the terminology he employs. Okay, so this is Harvey Milk then. Quote, begin quote. The American dream starts with the neighbourhoods. If we wish to rebuild our cities, we must first rebuild our neighbourhoods. And to do that, we must understand that the quality of life is more important than the standard of living. To sit on the front steps, whether it's a veranda in a small town or a concrete stoop in a big city, and talk to our neighbourhoods is infinitely more important than to huddle on the living room lounger and watch a make-believe world in not quite living colour. I think that what we actually need is a little more dirt on the seat of our pants as we sit on the front stoop and talk to our neighbours once again, enjoying the type of summer day where the smell of garlic travels slightly faster than the speed of sound. What's missing is the touch, the warmth, the meaning of life. End of quote. And last time I gave this talk in a physical meeting, a comedian in the audience said that thought at that point about the touch, the warmth, the meaning of life, that really captured very well as to what the sense of neighbourhood and community is. And I'll just repeat something else that Milk says there. The quality of life is more important than the standard of living. I think that's something to bear in mind. But more generally, perhaps members of the audience could tell us what they might like to do in a socialist society in the evenings. Won't be any socialist party meetings to go to. You'll have to find something else to do. And so to bed. We can't guarantee that everyone will have a good night's sleep in socialism, but the fact is there'll be far less to worry about than there is under capitalism. No one will have to worry about losing their job, not being able to pay the bills and so on. So, and there'll be far fewer in terms of possible problems at work the next day, though we can't say that there'll be no problems of any kind at all. So however well you sleep, after you get up the next morning, you'll be there ready for another day to enjoy another day of life in a socialist society. Thank you.